Welcome to Sacred Realms. What? It's a great day in Hyrule, y'all. Welcome to Sacred Realms, a Zelda retrospective podcast. I'm your host, Lyndon Willoughby, joined by my co-host, Matt Willoughby. Caught him right before he gets on a plane to go on a business trip for the week. So appreciate you fitting this in, Matt.
Yeah, you got to do the business and didn't want to have to take all the recording equipment with me on a plane. So we're going to squeeze this one in.
And then record over like a hotel Wi-Fi connection. And
that sounds really horrible.
Lots of elements of that situation sound bad and I don't want any part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it sounds like a great way to have some really crappy audio. So,
you know what doesn't sound bad at all, though? Basically, all of the completely unrestricted Tears of the Kingdom playtime that you're going to get over the next week.
That is true. I'm about to have about 3.5-4 hours round trip. This is a short trip on a plane, uninterrupted. Anytime I'm in the hotel room, uninterrupted. And since it's just me, I'm not going with any coworkers, it's going to be a lot of me time. Maybe I'll find a nice bar where I can go sit and play.
You know what? That was in the days before I had offspring and marital responsibilities. That was one of my favorite things to do. Actually, in the early Breath of the Wild days, I did kind of a little bit of that. I was married at the time, but I still, you know, we didn't have kiddo and wife was, you know, working late some nights. And so, yeah, every now and again, that's just a really fun and relaxing thing to do.
And maybe she just wanted a break from you and your bullshit. So you gave her that.
Who can blame her?
Nobody, not me.
She gets to have a glass of wine and watch Gilmore Girls. I get to play Breath of the Wild in a bar. Everyone wins.
I mean, honestly, my fiance and I did something similar last night. We had a pretty busy day. We've been starting to go to the gym together a lot to get wedding ready. Well, she already is. I am not. She is in great shape. She's actually like a online fitness coach. And so I finally decided with wedding coming up in the next year or so, I should probably start getting on that level as much as possible so I can look good for my wedding pictures and not look at them 5 years down the road and say, oh my gosh, I should have lost more weight. But anyway, so we're going to the gym together. So yesterday we had a marathon 45-minute gym session doing heavy lifting on legs. And we both got back to the apartment and we're just like dead. We were wiped out. We reheated some leftovers for dinner instead of cooking and just sat on the couch. She watched the Taylor Swift live stream concert and I played Breath of the Wild Tears of the Kingdom for like 3.5 hours. And we barely said two words to each other, except she would say like, oh, look how good she looks in this outfit. And I'd go, yeah, she looks great. And then I would keep playing Tears of the Kingdom.
Sounds like you have a solid foundation for like a marital dynamic there. That'll get you through a lot.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. It was one of the, I am a big quality time is one of my biggest love languages. And that can include just like coexisting together in the same space, but doing different things. And as long as we're both enjoying those things and occasionally look over and say, hey, I'm still here, still love you, not mad at you, we're all good. And then, you know, everybody just has a good evening.
Yep. Colleen and I, we definitely enjoy that particular brand of quality time as well. It can be really fun. So and what a good time to discover that for yourself and your relationship, Matt, because turns out you've got something to do right now.
Yes, absolutely. I've got, you know, I think it was really foolish of me to assume that like we could possibly at least beat the story of Tears of the Kingdom in this 4-week season. And I think we're going to have to. And like, I mean, I think we should, even if that means like we then spend the rest of the next 4 months playing this game, doing random side questy things.
Yeah, I don't know kind of where I'm at with that. I think where I've landed so far is that I'm not necessarily going to rush it. I don't think that I have a problem taking breaks during the week to knock out some Phantom Hourglass in the midst of Tears of the Kingdom. I think I'm fine with that. And I think I'd prefer doing that than giving myself an abbreviated experience with this game. Because the thing is, and I felt this way with Breath of the Wild too. Several times in the years after it came out, I thought, man, I wish I could go back and play this game again for the first time, right?
For sure.
And this is the first time for I mean, a game of equivalent like caliber, you know,
I would say greater.
And I really don't want to shortchange myself on that.
You know, I don't either. So I think we probably need to discuss what our next two, because we only have two left, what our next two episodes are going to be. Because if we're not going to beat the story, then we're not going to have like a final thoughts wrap up kind of episode.
No, and
right?
I didn't really want to do that anyway, because okay, that's more like regular season sort of stuff. So like next episode is going to be with Max, and we're going to be talking primarily about this game's systems and its mechanical interactions and stuff, because yeah, I'm sure he's got a lot of thoughts on the way that the pieces of this game all fit together from just a development standpoint, you know?
Sure. So, yeah, well, I think we'll have some more offline discussion on what exactly our next episode after that is going to be. And what we're going to cover, because, you know, we've committed to only doing two more, although maybe we should do a little poll and see if people want us to do a couple more and get more into certain aspects. But
I'm open to it. We'll check in with the Discord crowd on that and maybe put something up on socials. And yeah, we'll see. I do want to say, you know, we've had kind of a large influx of new listeners in the last 2 weeks,
which makes sense.
I think we were kind of banking on that hopefully happening. If you can't pick up new people during this kind of event, then you got a problem.
Yeah, that's the sign of not a healthy podcast.
Right. So
thank you to all of you who are just tuning in for the first or, you know, newer listeners. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah. And whether you're listening on a podcast service of your choice, or if you're listening via YouTube on the Zelda Universe channel, really appreciate all of y'all, and glad we can all be going on this journey together. It's just a thrill ride nonstop.
Absolutely. It's amazing. You know, I think if you are a new listener and you enjoy our podcast, go give some of the earlier seasons a listen. Maybe start with Breath of the Wild. And then if you like that season, then hit the whole backlog, because I think we've got some great pod.
That one will take you long enough.
Yeah, seriously. Because we've got some great pod covering some really, really great games. If you started with Ocarina of Time Chapter 1, the format has evolved quite a lot since then.
Significantly. So,
please don't stop listening after Ocarina of Time Episode 1. Keep listening, because it gets better. I promise it gets better.
We've grown. We're better. We've come a long way.
And I mean, after 2+ years, I would hope so.
I can't remember. The initial announcement trailer where they said they were working on a Breath of the Wild sequel, that had come out by the time we started this podcast, right? I mean, it's been years.
No,
because I was still working in office at PFS when that happened. And so it would have had to have been before, because we started recording mid COVID.
OK, yeah, that probably tracks then. But yeah, that was a long time, man. Feels like just yesterday.
Stuff has most certainly happened. There's no getting around that,
man.
Crazy how we're recording in the garage and the TIE fighters
are still active.
It's cozy out here. I like this.
Yeah, this isn't too bad.
This is not a bad...
this is a good rain weather backup.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that. The trouble is, depending on how loud it's raining...
Roof.
Yeah, the tin roof of the carport, I think, could be a problem. But anyway, we do have some more game that we want to get around to discussion about today. This is the second of two bonus episodes that we're devoting exclusively to just thoughts and impressions around Tears of the Kingdom. Of course, we're not doing a rank and recap. We're not doing a review. This is not our official Tears of the Kingdom season. But we really just wanted to be able to get some thoughts on the podcast as we were all playing for the first time. I think that was a good decision. And for me, it's definitely helping. It's fun to be playing this game for the first time and also keeping the pod in the back of mind as I'm playing and trying to like analyze my experiences in the game from like a critical standpoint, or from the standpoint of somebody who like wants to be able to break it all down in this sort of conversational format. It's really fun. And it like a completely unique experience for us, aside from like older games, which we might be playing for the first time on the podcast, which actually I haven't done yet. And this is going to be Phantom Hourglass. Going to be my
first one.
Mm-hmm. Not your first one. Several of these you haven't played
just
before.
Ours collectively.
Right. Yeah. But it is a really great extra layer on top of the whole new game experience for me. I'm really enjoying it. Of course, today we have got a lot more. We're going to go a lot deeper with the game than we did last week. Last week was very much about just the introductory area. We wanted to talk specifically about the tutorial section and leave basically everything else out of the discussion. This episode, I think what we agreed is that we're going to be talking about our first 10 to 15 hours post the Great Sky Island, right? So we've made it down to the surface. We've made it to certain other places, right? And so I just want to give us some time to talk through all of that as the game has really opened up for us at this point. And I think we now have a good idea of like what the main core of the gameplay loop is for Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, and I know you're being a little coy about other places, but the fact that Nintendo, I almost said Bungie, the fact that Nintendo
only,
the fact that Nintendo was able to keep a whole third section of this game completely hidden for the entire development cycle.
No, I completely agree. I think it's the kind of thing that a lot of game studios working on this kind of game, right? Like this open world, massive exploration, third person game of which we have a lot on the market right now. A lot of game studios would be choosing to leverage all of their playable areas in marketing materials, in gameplay demos, E3 sort of stuff, you know, just to like, you know, to make it look as appealing as possible to potential buyers, you know. Obviously, this is Zelda and the game's going to sell like hotcakes no matter what. So Nintendo's kind of in a unique position where I don't think they need, like, they can afford to hold some things back.
Yeah.
And I really love that because it's just a fantastic surprise as we were kind of like learning it in real time playing this game. I don't want to talk about any of that too specifically yet. Let's go ahead and get the housekeeping out of the way. And then at the end of the housekeeping, I'm just going to let everybody know sort of generally what, from a spoiler standpoint, the category of things that we're going to be talking about. So, if you are still worried about some level of spoilers, just like the main mechanics and loop of the game, then I'll give you some more specific info about, you know, what we'll be saying in case you want to bounce at the end of housekeeping. Totally respect that decision for all of y'all who are, you know, trying to go in unspoiled, even though the game's been 2 weeks out at this point. You know, not everyone's playing on the same schedule, so just want to be as upfront as possible. But if you didn't know, Sacred Realms is a weekly reexamination of The Legend of Zelda, one little slice at a time. Sacred Realms drops every Wednesday and is available on all major podcast networks. Every week, we play a new section of a Zelda game, and then we sit down here to talk and to drop our hot takes. If that sounds fun to you, please head over to Apple Podcasts, hit that subscribe button, and be sure to leave us a review. 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated, and they have a chance to get a shout-out here on the show. If you want more Sacred Realms in your life, you can head over to patreon.com/sacredrealmspod and get access to our Discord channel, Listener Mail, vote on what game we play next, and much more. Additionally, one of the benefits that Master Sword patrons and above get is that we read their names every week here on the show. Those legendary individuals are Connor, Shepherd Street, Matthew, Chris, Daniel, Fallout 907, Kelso, Tiffany the Star, Daxel, Patrice, Stephanie, Darknuck, Brian, George, Mike, Dylan, Lennon, Melanie, Kolku, Aiden, Rowan, Josh, Nick, Dante, Gep, Brittany, Davey, Haru the Mighty, Derek, Albert, Mark, Andy, Cameron, Ben, Daniel, Nick_D_TV, Travis, Christian, Jonathan, Hyrule Interviews, aka Max Nichols, Garrett, and Drew. These are the most legendary of individuals, and I would get my ass absolutely roasted by a Thunder Gleok while all of y'all watch any day of the week.
Yeah, that happened very frequently. Yeah. Those guys are rough.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be a fun one to talk about. But without further ado, let's talk about what we played. Usually we do that in the Sacred Realms rundown. Of course, that segment is taking a break for this 4 week or more period of Tears of the Kingdom discussion. We're just going to have a much more kind of unformatted segment of conversation where we can just have a little bit of back and forth and, you know, have a little bit of natural feeling discussion without the need to categorize it into different segments. So as I said, just a little upfront info about what this episode is going to specifically cover. Like we said, first 10 to 15 hours of the post Great Sky Island section of the game. What we will not be talking about is one, any of the main dungeon-like areas. Matt and I haven't done any of those yet. We will not be mentioning major story spoilers. There is a mechanic in this game that is not dissimilar to the memory system of Breath of the Wild, and we will be talking just a little bit about the very first segment of that, but we'll not be delving too deeply into story stuff past that. There'll be just a little bit of story discussion, but nothing too, you know, late game or nothing groundbreaking from a lore standpoint for the most part. And we will be talking about all the playable areas of this game. There are three main sections that you can play in, and we will be discussing all three of those in detail. And we will be talking about enemies that we've come across and different areas of the map that we have explored, including reprises of locations from Breath of the Wild. So not completely a non-spoiler discussion, but definitely not getting into, like, you know, this is what happens if you beat, like, when you beat the final boss or whatever. You know, we're not going to be getting into anything like that. So anyway, if you're still here, then that's what you're going to be getting into. Matt, so what I want to start with is an estimate from you on exactly how much time you think you've spent with the game up until this point.
I'm trying to figure that out right now. There's not a lot of information on the Switch about playtime. Let me see.
If you had to ballpark it.
If I had to ballpark it, probably 20 hours.
Yeah, I would say I'm somewhere between 15 and 20 hours. I would, you know, I want to say closer to 20. The difficult thing is that I'm finding it's very difficult for me to quantify my time expenditure with this game. Like with other games, I feel like you've got certain markers, like levels beaten or areas discovered or whatever, and it's a little bit more linear. And I can kind of quantify the amount of time I've spent with it based on that. But this game is just such like it's a cyclone of time, right? I mean, it's just much like Breath of the Wild. It's the sort of game where I'm very rarely moving in any kind of linear fashion whatsoever. You know, I'm getting constantly distracted, you know, doing little odd tasks here and there, losing hours at a time to just like seeing something interesting in the distance and moving
going
off towards
that way.
That. Yeah.
So like, and to that point, I found myself spending over an hour going from a shrine that I dove out of the sky to get to because it was further away than I wanted to walk. I dove to that shrine, and once I left that shrine, I found there was a stable right next to it. I went over there, and there was one of those little four-wheel drive stone slab cars.
Yeah.
And I just got on that and started driving back towards the back towards Rito Village, which I had left that area to go over here. Yeah. I could have fast traveled over there, but I spent over an hour driving this little car, stopping on the road, going and doing random things, getting back on the car, driving forward again.
So are you? So I have tried using Fuse to create a bunch of different things, and I've been having a good time with it.
Fuse or Master Hand?
Ultra Hand. Yeah, my bad.
Ultra Hand.
Yeah. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. I have not found any control sticks, like any of the joysticks that you do to actually steer these things yet.
I haven't either. Like, okay. Luckily, well, actually, this was the only time I've ever found one. And it was there on the car. I have used Auto Build to literally construct something so that I could take the control stick off of it.
Gotcha.
So like that's the most frequent way of finding control sticks that I have come across, as having to just pay for them with Zonite.
I want to talk about Auto Build more here in just a second. So let's break the conversation up into one. Let's talk about the surface of Hyrule, aka the Breath of the Wild overworld, basically.
Very loosely, like it is vastly different. Like I know it's generally laid out the same, obviously.
Yeah.
But everything in between the major areas is very, very, very different.
Yeah. So I think we've both played enough now to be able to render a judgment on the whole, is this too familiar question.
Not at all.
Not at all.
No, not at all. It is, I've gone places where I thought I would find something like from Breath of the Wild, and there's been something completely new or nothing at all. And then the only thing that I've come across that was more or less the same was an area close to Rito Village where it's got the stone archways with the circles in the middle, and you're supposed to shoot an arrow between two of them to that get
was,
a shrine.
That was a cast quest. And
yeah, it was. And I found that place and actually tried to solve the Breath of the Wild puzzle, but you can't because the stone that you needed to shoot through has been destroyed. So it's just there now.
So it's just like fun scenery.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun little Easter egg for people who did play Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I've looked around, and I've also, one of the first things I did when I got to the surface was checked in on a few places that I was really fond of in Breath of the Wild. I have not had time to go and check out like, you know, Hateno Village or Kakariko Village or anything.
Yeah, I haven't been there either.
Basically the whole Dueling Peaks area of the map, I have not even slightly wandered that direction yet. But
I've stuck to the west side of the map, like basically beeline from Hyrule down to Great Plateau and then go west, but also north. Like, I haven't gone into Gerudo at all. I've been hanging out in the central Hyrule, Hyrule Ridge, Forgotten Temple, Rito Village, Hebra area.
Yeah, like, exactly. And I think a lot of that too is just because the early game, if you're following the quests and their progression at all, it kind of is funneling you towards that section of the map, right? Much like how Breath of the Wild seemed like it really wanted you to do Zora's Domain first. This game is really kind of moving you towards the Rito Village area at the beginning of things.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I've been exploring the same area for most of the same reasons. I spent a lot of time on the Great Plateau.
I spent the majority of this chunk of time on the Great Plateau.
Just because, for one thing, you know, as we said in last week's episode, the Great Plateau is such an iconic area from Breath of the Wild. And I felt like that would kind of serve as a good measuring stick of like how different are can I expect things to be in this game from Breath of the Wild, right? Yeah. And definitely not disappointed. I mean, a lot of the locations and stuff are the same, and it was fun to revisit them. But the Great Plateau has seen a lot of changes since Breath of the Wild. This is one of the things that fictionally I'm really enjoying about this game right now, and one of the reasons that I think it's actually such an effective direct sequel to Breath of the Wild is that you're getting all the emotional connection to that world and to the geography and all the places that we went because we cared about them and we spent so much time in Breath of the Wild. But you're getting enough extra change to where it still feels like new exploration and new discovery. And in some ways, it's even more satisfying because you have that emotional investment in those spaces to kind of back up everything you're doing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And like the Great Plateau, and I texted you this while I was playing through it, it just feels way bigger for some reason. And maybe I didn't spend as much time as I thought I did on the Great Plateau in Breath of the Wild, but I easily spent 5-6 hours on the Great Plateau. And there's only like 2 or 3 shrines there. I think 2.
Yeah.
And
I've only found one. So
yeah, there's one under the waterfall. Did you find that one?
God, no.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, there's one under the waterfall of Dead Man's River.
Oh, sweet. Okay. I love it when things are under waterfalls.
It's great. Yeah. So it's crazy how different it feels. And
More dangerous.
So dangerous, dude. It's very, very, all of the enemies are like black level enemies, black Bokoblins, black Lazalfos. I spent a lot of time on the mountain region, Mount Hylia.
Yeah.
And, you know, ice keys obviously are terrifying because they freeze you instantly. Yeah. I was running around with only 3 hearts.
Freaking gloom hands.
Dude, gloom hands are so scary.
Gloom hands are freaking terrifying. They are. I think it's just obviously the model of those enemies looks horrifying in and of itself. But the fact that like a little like the sky turns blood moon red
and they screech as soon as they see you
and they're fast.
They're so fast.
They hunt you the freak down. Yeah, like
they're relentless.
I think the only way that I've found to actually outrun them and get away from them is not, you can't just sprint away from them on the ground. You know, you pretty much got to get height over them. You've got to climb.
Yeah. Yeah. That's totally true. And I found a useful way to more or less despawn the gloom hands. So if you throw a giant bright bloom seed at them and you hit it like right in the middle to where it will illuminate them all simultaneously, they'll despawn and leave you a couple dark clumps that you can then infuse into meals for gloom resistant meals.
Nice.
However, you just showed this to me right before we started recording. If you defeat them the normal way, you get something way cooler.
Way cooler. And I'm not going to, so I don't want to say exactly what this enemy is. Whenever you defeat the gloom hands just by traditional combat, in this case we used bomb flower arrows, an enemy does spawn where they were defeated, and then a much harder fight starts. And all I will say is that it is the return of a classic Zelda enemy, and it's stinking cool. Like, the character design of this enemy is fantastic, and the fight was hard as balls. Like, I died several times trying to take this guy down, and I eventually just kind of left the area and was like, you know what? I need better weapons and more hearts before I decide to try and do this again. So, that was great. I loved everything about that. It was a fantastic surprise. Talking more about the Great Plateau, I think it was fun because, so for one thing, I always appreciate going back to the ruined Temple of Time. That's always fun for me.
Oh, absolutely.
I actually tried to turn in a few of my Blessings of Light for Heartpiece there at that statue.
Yeah, and you got the cryptic, it starts a quest, actually.
It does start a quest, and that's a really, really fun little quest, not least of which for the reason that it involves draining a pond, which is always fun.
I always love draining a pond in Zelda. It's a great thing to do.
It's neat. It's really neat. So that's a fun little quest that takes you to another area that we'll talk about here in just a minute.
Did you complete this quest all the way through?
I did.
So did I.
Yeah.
How long did it take you?
Probably 4 or 5 hours.
Same.
Yeah.
And it's mostly because as I was doing it, I kept getting distracted by all the other things I was seeing in the area.
Yep.
Because this area is bonkers.
Yeah. Yep.
Can we just say it again, like, and stop beating around the bush? Can we just say it?
So the... No, I want to keep it in its own specific section, and we'll come back to it at that point. What I do want to talk about is something that is still very related to the surface level, and that is that's a thing that's pretty much new to Tears of the Kingdom. Breath of the Wild had like very small versions of this, but not many, and that is caves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very major component of exploration and discovery in Tears of the Kingdom, and I love that so much. There is something that's so fun to me in a Zelda game about discovering a cave and like going all the way back in there to see, like, you know, what's hiding. Is it going to be some good materials? Is it going to be a cache of rupees, one or two good weapons? It's some scary enemies. It's so great because some of these caves, the one on the Great Plateau that I found so it's actually where the Shrine of Resurrection used to be. That one is not too big, but I stumbled across some cave systems in other places of Hyrule this week that were pretty massive, like very large systems of caves that took me 20 or 30 minutes to get through. And of course, if at any time you don't want to be in there anymore, you can just use Ascend and just pop back up into the overworld. But still, I mean, I never wanted to do that. It was always just so fun discovering things in there. You know, I found one or two caves that had armor hidden at the very back. You know, of course, every cave has got one of those bubble frogs that drop those bubble gems. I still have no idea what those are for yet.
Yeah, I have not found where to trade those in.
But I've collected, I don't know, probably 10 or 15 of them at this point. So and that's really fun, too, because the way that caves sort of work, it's kind of like shrines where each shrine has its bonus chest that you have to do something a little extra to get, right? And I don't like leaving shrines until I've gotten the bonus chest. I don't know how you are with it.
I was that way in Breath of the Wild, and I was doing the same thing here, but found 9 times out of 10, I was actually just being given some kind of crappy Zonai weapon that I had something better already, and I had a full inventory, because I also haven't found Hestu yet to expand my inventory. So I've
also not found Hestu
until
yet.
I have an expanded inventory, I think I'm not going to worry too terribly much about it, because most of the time that I've found them, I haven't gotten materials. It's always been like a weapon or something that I don't need or have room for.
Well, the nice thing is, I don't know if you've noticed this, but when you look at your map and you look at shrines that you've cleared, there's a little icon that appears next to it if you've found the chest in that shrine. So you can kind of keep track of like which ones you have and haven't done yet.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But anyway, so the point is about the caves, though. It's got a similar thing to the shrines where each cave, as far as I've seen so far, has got one of those bubble frogs. And so it can be great because you can get multiple rooms into a cave system. And if you haven't found a bubble frog yet, you pretty much always know there's more to this cave. Like, I need to keep exploring because I'm basically not done with it yet. I think that that's really fun. That's a good little Zelda order of operations scenario there to keep in the back of your mind. How have you felt about caves and the addition of those and wells as well?
I love the little dopamine boost that you get when it goes new location discovered. And like that alone is a small thing, but it's just a huge addition that is very meaningful to me when I'm exploring, is I feel that sense of reward, extrinsic, intrinsic, however you want to say it. It's really great. I have found that gems are significantly more useful in Tears of the Kingdom than they were in Breath of the Wild, which we talked a lot about last week. And so I am now far more excited when I find caves that are just filled with ore, because that translates to
rubies, sapphires,
that I can infuse into swords or shields to make them better.
It's
really good. I like it a lot. The most common enemy type that you find in caves outside of the bubbles is, likes. And they're way scarier in this game than they have been in any other game.
And we didn't really talk about there. So there were likes on Great Sky Island. But yeah, we didn't really talk about them too much last week. I agree. The design for likes in this game is disgusting and horrifying. And they're definitely not a pushover enemy either. And so I've actually gotten to the point where I've started discovering variants of likes. So obviously there's just the regular ones, right? But I mean, I found electric likes that shoot little zappy balls at you. I found a like in one cave that was perpetually spitting giant boulders at you down a very narrow chasm. And so
I saw that one too. Yeah.
And so basically what you had to do was to cast recall and shoot the boulders back at the like to get up and stun it and actually do damage to it. Really, really cool little system. And it kind of leads into one thing that I'm really enjoying about the surface area right now, which is the increase in the variety of enemies compared to Breath of the Wild. There are just so many different, like, obviously we've got the return of things like Bokoblins and Lizalfos and all those things that we know from Breath of the Wild. We have more variants of some of those than we did in Breath of the Wild, but we have so many more new enemy types, right? Like, we've got Horriblins, we've got Boss Bokoblins, we've got Gloomhands, like I mentioned before. You know, we've got Aracudas, Horriblins. Like, we've got a lot of really cool enemy types that are floating around this world.
Yeah. And even the like, I think you said this, but the Bokoblins are way more dangerous. The Moblins are way more dangerous. The Boss Bokoblins. But also the fact that you actually have a reason to go kill them now. Those the monster parts that you can get from them are so useful.
Yeah.
And it makes me more interested in actually engaging in combat than I was in Breath of the Wild. Breath of the Wild was a lot about trying to get from one place to another. And if you see a big Bokoblin camp and you have full inventory, or you have, you know, you don't really need much, then you're just like, I don't really want to get in that fight. Yeah. But at this point, I'm like, no, I want to get in that fight because, you know, maybe I can get a Boss Bokoblin horn that I then can infuse onto a weapon to turn it into something 10 times better than what I have. So it turns combat into something to be sought out instead of to be avoided.
Yeah, the loop is really great there. I think it's something like, looking back on Breath of the Wild now, and I always liked the combat in Breath of the Wild, and I never had a problem with the item durability system, which we've talked about a lot. But I think it was missing one extra layer of engagement to just really put it over the top. And monster part collection for the purposes of fusing onto your inventory of weapons is that extra layer. It just keeps you much more engaged in the whole process. And it lends a lot more variety to to your combat and to your inventory. Because instead of having, you know, if you've got six swords in your inventory, you know, you don't just have six possible swords. You've got 30 or 40 potential weapons right there, depending on how many monster pieces or whatever other fusible material you have in your inventory. That, like, you just can't undersell how much depth that adds to the whole minute to minute gameplay system in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, I totally agree. It turns, I think you said this last week, it turns what would be junk pickups from Breath of the Wild into something that can potentially be useful, even if it's just, I need something to attach a rock to so that I can break some boulders or get some ore. Yep. Well, now I have just a stick mm-hmm. and I can do that and it becomes useful again. So I love that they have dialed that up to where everything is potentially useful in some way.
Yeah. How has your experience with shrines been so far?
I love the shrines in this game. I think they are better far and away than the shrines from Breath of the Wild.
Completely agree.
It's like the puzzles are more engaging. They're more fun. I think a lot of that comes from the abilities that we have right now are also just better.
Yeah.
Like, sure, I miss remote bombs. Mm-hmm. Fine. I'll say it. I miss remote bombs.
Yeah.
But also, I have gotten so much more
yeah.
out of it that mm-hmm. I don't care. And I don't mind. So and it makes the puzzle solving so various. Like, there's no one right way to do shrines for the most part. Like, there are a couple that do require something very specific, but it you're limited only by your imagination and what you are able to pull off with Ultra Hand.
It's a really fun experience to be in a shrine and to discover the solution to a puzzle, or I should more accurately say to discover a solution to the puzzle, and to think to yourself, man, I'm not sure if that's the way that Nintendo intended for me or wanted for me to solve that. And then you think about it for another second and you realize, oh, that's exactly the way that Nintendo intended me to interact with this. The intention is that there's not one direct solution to this puzzle. Like, that's the whole thing. And Breath of the Wild had a little bit of that too, but it's like what you're talking about. The abilities that we have now are capable of so much more than the Sheikah runes were. And so, yeah, I mean, shrines have been just a blast for me so far. Some of them have been legitimate brain teasers. Like, I've really had to stop down and think about them for a minute. The other thing is that we seem to have completely gotten rid of just test of strength shrines. There may be something like that later in the game. I just haven't come across it yet. But I've done enough shrines now to where I feel pretty confident in saying that I don't think we're going to have a return to the minor, modest, and major test of strength, and then like 1/3 of all total shrines fall into that. You know?
What I have found, I found a couple like combat training shrines where it teaches you how to do something specific.
Yeah.
I've also found a shrine that does what Eventide Island did, where it just strips you of all of your equipment, throws you in there and says, cool, go beat it, have fun.
Well, and I actually really like, so when you went into that shrine, I think we're talking about the same one, it specifically mentions that it's like a minor combat shrine.
Right.
Which, you know, which then leads you to the conclusion that there are tiers of difficulty within that type of shrine. And if that's what they have replaced the tests of strength, like the big robot fights from Breath of the Wild with, then man, what an excellent glow up on that concept, right? This whole sort of Eventide Island situation is so much more, it requires so much more thought and so much more experimentation, kind of Trial of the Swords-esque, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so just knowing that there are more difficult versions of that on the horizon is wildly exciting to me. I just absolutely can't wait to discover those. What are some of your favorite locations on the surface that are Breath of the Wild locations that have some substantial changes?
That is a great question. Other than the Great Plateau, which we've already talked about, I think the area right outside Hyrule Castle, Lookout Landing.
Look at your map. You got
that's
it open.
A good point. I do have the game literally open right now. I was right. Lookout Landing.
There you go.
Cool. Go me.
Which is built right on top of the champion's area from Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, and there's a cool little thing where the guard can tap and the champions where you were sworn in like opens up to an underground like safe house.
Turns out there was like a bunker there the whole time,
which is really cool. Yeah. So I love that whole area. I love seeing civilization returning to Hyrule, which I think is what that is most indicative mm-hmm. of to me, is like people post-calamity like went out and like started actually living and repopulating and rebuilding. And that I love that. And, you know, my headcanon for what happened to all the Sheikah stuff, which we didn't talk about too much last week, but there's no Sheikah shrines, divine beasts, towers, anything. They're all gone. My whole headcanon right now, until proven otherwise, is that the citizens of Hyrule just literally dismantled all of it to then turn into what we have now,
which the Skyview Towers.
The Skyview Towers, which cover a much larger area.
Yes.
And also, I think there's just, they probably used them as just building materials in general. And, the Pura Pad is obviously the same thing as a Sheikah tablet, but different and in some ways better.
I like to think that Pura and Robbie have got like a stash of a lot of this dismantled Sheikah tech, and they're just like using it for their own development and whatnot. Because you're right, the Skyview Towers clearly are Sheikah in nature, and they're about the only thing in the game that is right now.
So
that's really cool. I really do like that headcanon. I think I'd pretty much landed in a very similar place. I really like Lookout Landing as well. Great Plateau was a highlight for sure. It was really fun to, I launched up through the central Hyrule Skyview Tower and glided down onto floating Hyrule Castle. And I had saved before I did that because I was just preparing myself for a situation where I accidentally trigger like a cutscene.
And then you try to back out as quickly as possible because you don't want to get spoiled on the cutscene.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like I'm not here to have like the end game fight start right now or anything. I don't even know if that's possible in this game. But I floated into the sanctum where you fight the Blight Ganons, like the throne room.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And checked that out. So it was really fun to be able to just poke around on floating Hyrule Castle without the pressure of like knowing that you were going to start the final boss fight of the game, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That was really nice. And then what else? I still haven't gone to several of the places that I really want to check in. I saved and ended my game last time I played on Satori Mountain. I'm on my way to Rito Village, and I wanted to stop at Satori Mountain and check in on the Lord of the Mountains Cherry Blossom Grove. Mm-hmm. I've been led to believe that the Lord of the Mountain is there's a little bit more substance to that character in this game. So I just wanted to go check all of that out. And I also figured that there'd probably be a pretty bitchin' cave system on Satori Mountain. And I did find the entrance. I haven't gotten him yet. But so that was really fun. I really loved going to Satori Mountain in Breath of the Wild. The Lord of the Mountain and the Cherry Blossom Grove is just a really beautiful location for sure. But Satori Mountain is also one of the best material farming locations in the entire game, or at least it was before. And so I'm going to, stock up on some materials and then move on to Rito Village from there. Where are you most excited to go check out?
I haven't even been to Hyrule Castle yet, so I'm kind of really excited about that.
Outside of the just the people you had to talk to in the gatehouses for the quest.
Right. Yeah, correct. So I did that, and then I also explored some underground of Hyrule Castle. Like, there are some cave systems that you can go in and just kind of explore around, and it's not into the new area that we have yet to talk about. It's just some caverns, and explored all through there. That was actually the first thing I did really outside of landing down there, and I got my favorite set of armor in the game.
There you go.
So I got my knight's armor immediately, which I totally didn't know was down there, but just happy accident and very happy Matt.
I'm still rocking the Hylian tunic set.
I think that's a good one. I actually am currently wearing the Hylian hood just because I think it looks good with everything.
Sure. Looks great. Definitely does.
I am excited. I'm really excited to go to the two main towns that we visited most in Breath of the Wild. I'm excited to see Kakariko and Hitenno. You know what? Tarrytown. Obviously, we built Tarrytown. What does it look like?
It's got to be doing pretty great. Hudson seems like he's
President Hudson.
Yeah. Enjoying life as like a tycoon of industry.
Yeah.
He's got fans, so
he has many, many fans.
Can we talk about Sign Guy?
I love Sign Guy. Every time I see Sign Guy, I stop immediately and help him every time.
Yep.
He's a true bro.
He's so invested. You know, I want all the best for him. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to let President Hudson down.
He's a corporate man through and through. And, you know, this seems like a pre-capitalistic society where it's just mostly based off of like loyalty. And President Hudson must be such a good guy to inspire such loyalty.
You got to believe it. I mean, to the point where they even have matching haircuts. That's devotion.
That's true.
Yeah.
So I am all about helping Sign Guy. And, you know, Hudson was a true bro back in Breath of the Wild. We built that whole town with him. He asked us to be present at his wedding. Like, you know, there's some real camaraderie there. And yep. I like to think that Hudson has been one of the key factors in the rebuilding of Hyrule for the last 5 to 7 years.
Sure.
Which we've discovered is kind of the timeline between Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom is 5 to 7 years-ish.
Yeah.
So
so basically like real world time.
Yeah, which is kind of cool, actually. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I'm down to help Hudson. I'm down to support someone who's that passionate about what they're doing. So
I really want to. So for one thing, I really want to make my way over to Eventide Island and see what's there now. And if there's any, you know, if they've done anything cool with that space, like obviously I don't think it's going to be the same sort of deal as it was in Breath of the Wild, since those are shrines now. But I really want to see what's at Eventide Island. And you know where I really want to go is Fort Akala. I want to go to the Akala Citadel.
Ooh, that's a good call, because now it's not all Guardianified.
It's not. And you got
to wonder if it just got destroyed by Zonai ruins, though.
I don't know. We'll see. You got to believe that if it's still there, then they're leveraging like the cave system in a way that you can actually kind of like explore the interior of it.
That would be so cool.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah,
I really want to do that. So is there anything else that you want to say about the surface specifically before we move on and talk about the other thing?
I wonder how our Zora friends are doing. I know what's going on with the Rito and their huge blizzard. I can see just in the distance, Death Mountain is now, instead of exploding volcano, it's exploding gloom. So I feel like that's probably going to be an extraordinarily challenging portion of the map. Like,
yep.
I think that one's probably going to be the hardest just based on what I'm looking at in the distance. So yeah, I'm kind of curious what's going on both with our Gerudo and Zora friends. Nothing looks very amiss from what I can see. So yeah, I'm just kind of curious. I know that we're going to get to see some old characters returning, which I'm very excited about. So I think I'm just really, really excited to see what the differences are in these main areas as we continue our explorations.
Yep, completely agree. So, all right, we've been beating around the bush a lot. Let's go ahead and talk about the third playable main area of Tears of the Kingdom, the one that they managed to keep secret for this entire time, and an area that I have spent just as much time in over the last week as I have the surface. And that is, of course, the depths. Turns out that giant chasms have opened in the surface of Hyrule. You can descend through those chasms, and they take you to a massive underground area, completely dark. You can illuminate it with bright bulbs and other stuff, and you find ways to illuminate large sections of it as you kind of explore it more, but completely dark. And this entire underground area is basically the size of Hyrule itself. It's basically an entire playable space that is the exact same size as the world above it. So, for one thing, that's such an incredible thing to be able to say, right, is that we've got basically triple the game that we had in Breath of the Wild, right?
Like, right. If you count, it's nuts.
Like, between sky, surface, and depths, there's just so much there. But the thing that's great about the depths is that it's not just like barren cavern systems, right? There's a lot of stuff to find down there. And I've only sort of scratched the surface so far on what all is down there to be discovered. But there's a lot of really interesting stuff, for instance, directly underneath the Great Plateau, like, abandoned Zonai mining facilities and ruins and all kinds of stuff. It's definitely, you know, there's definitely a lot of things to get up to down there. And I'm having a really good time with it. Matt, how are you feeling about the depths?
The depths are amazing. It feels like one big shadow temple constantly.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love how creepy it is, because as soon as you step down there, you're just surrounded by darkness so complete, you can't see. Like, even if you turn your brightness all the way up, no matter what, you cannot see. But you feel the sense of dread and danger that is down there. And that's one thing about this entire game, is it is so much more dangerous across the board than Breath of the Wild ever was.
I'm getting my ass kicked.
Constantly. I am constantly dying. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Like, it's so much fun. And the depths is even more so, because on top of having dangerous enemies, lack of visibility, you could easily just fall in a hole without even knowing that you're about to fall in a hole if you're not throwing bright seeds everywhere.
Yeah.
All of the enemies are gloom tainted enemies who, when they hit you, they permanently take away a heart. Like, you can't recover that heart
until you go back to the overworld
or you find a light route that you can activate.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild. And it's also the best place for Zonite in the entire game. And Zonite being very important to
upgrading your energy cells.
Yes, which is huge, especially if you want to do what I do, which is be addicted to building combat planes that you can fly around.
Right.
I love building the planes.
Yep. Got to get that battery power.
Yeah. So I'm constantly down there trying to farm Zonite and get more energy cells and... So there's a conversion. It's Zonite to, it's not charges. It's
Zonite to crystal charges, I think.
Crystallized something. And then from that to energy cells.
Yeah. This game has got quite a lot of economies going on within it.
There's a lot. Yeah. I even found a new one today.
What?
Or it was yesterday. It's called Spirit of the Sage or something.
Oh, I haven't found that yet.
Sounds very interesting.
Okay. I haven't found that one yet.
Yeah, it's called Sage's Will. I found it in the sky.
Wild. Okay.
I did a little puzzle on one of the sky islands and opened a chest, and it had Sage's Will. And okay. I was like,
I haven't found that one yet. The one that I have been messing around with the most over the last few days is Pose.
Yes, I've gotten a lot of Pose.
Which you can, so we were talking earlier about this little side quest that you get up to on the Great Plateau, or rather between the Great Plateau and under it.
The depths of the Great Plateau?
Yeah, basically what happens is this this massive structure, this sentient statue in the depths, is communicating with you through the goddess statue in the ruined Temple of Time. And, you know, what it says is that it's got four eyes that... it's missing. It's got four statue eyes that it's missing. And you have to go find these four eyes on the Great Plateau, throw them into the depths, and then slot them back into the statue. And then once you've done that, so the eyes are actually, they're hidden next to the chasms on the Great Plateau. And coincidentally, all the Great Plateau chasms are in the exact same locations that the four original shrines were. I don't know if you noticed that.
I actually did not catch that.
Yeah, they're in the exact same spots. So you're kind of having to explore all around the Great Plateau if you're doing that side quest, similarly to how you did in the early moments of Breath of the Wild. But anyway, once you get all four of these eyes slotted back into this statue, then one, it gives you either a heart piece or a stamina wheel, which that's awesome. We love when we just get handed those things. But also you can start trading Pose that you've collected in the depths.
Which did you choose?
A heart piece.
So did I.
So I actually, in early Breath of the Wild, my play was always to go much harder into stamina than life. And you just can't do that in Tears of the Kingdom, is what I've found so far. Like, there are so many things that are just kicking my ass up one side and down the other. You really do need the extra vitality from hearts. And I'm finding that, especially just because of the way that Skyview Towers work. And you can, and like the fact that you can one, ascend through things, and two, you can drop places from the sky, you know, like traversal is just, it's not that it's easier or less fun in Tears of the Kingdom than it was in Breath of the Wild, but you're spending a lot less of your time just climbing up the sides of mountains.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I have done I've done almost 30 shrines at this point, and I have two full stamina wheels. So obviously you start out with one. I've completed a full stamina wheel, and at this point I'm just feeding everything into hearts. I'm up to I'm up to six. And like at this point, I'm just going to keep going for hearts because even with six hearts, I'm still dying all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. And the other part of that is I'm trying to find great fairies to upgrade my armor. I finally found one, but she won't come out unless I get someone to play a flute for her.
There's some kind of side quest attached to that. And I have not found the trigger for it. I haven't found the start of it yet.
I got all the context clues that she's looking for someone to play a flute for her. I talked to somebody at a stable and they were like, yeah, there's this traveling group of musicians. They're currently over at the Woodland Stable in Elden. And I'm like,
the opposite of
yeah,
going
I don't
right
want to go over there. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's okay. Like, I need to upgrade my knight's armor because I just don't feel like I have enough defense.
Yeah.
And I also don't have enough life. So just
three defense on armor is definitely not cutting it for stuff right now.
No, it's really not.
For instance, like I tried, and this is kind of aside from the depths, but I tried to go visit the Colosseum the other day.
Hey, I did too.
Cool. Guess what's living in there now?
A Thunder Gleok that is basically impossible to kill.
It just roasted my ass immediately.
Every single thing it does is a one hit kill. Everything.
Like I got in there, I got in there ready for like a Lynel fight or something. And here I am feeling like such a huge badass because like I know how to fight a Lynel. I'm ready for anything. And I get in there and then just like this thing just AC 130s me.
Dude, like it's a lot like Ghidorah from Godzilla.
Yeah.
He's got the fire and it's like it's shooting literal laser beams because it's thunder. Yeah. So he's just shooting lightning
at you.
But
the thing that I love about the thing I love about Gleox in this game is that so for one thing, I love new versions on very old, very classic Zelda enemies.
Oh, absolutely.
Always great, right? And one of the coolest things that Breath of the Wild did was make the Lynels terrifying. You know,
for sure.
And it seems like Tears of the Kingdom has done that for Gleox as well. I have not gotten anywhere close to defeating one. I don't know how you do it. I don't know what you get for defeating one. So those are things that I'm probably going to find out way later in this game. But to me, that's so exciting, right? I love this very tangible feeling of knowing that the ceiling on your experiences within this game and the difficulty of that is so much higher than anything that I'm even remotely close to right now.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That's a great, exciting feeling. We really got off track talking about the depths, but okay. So going back to the depths real quick though, one thing that I think is really interesting about that whole area is that you have to handle exploration of them very differently than you do on the surface. So on the surface, the way that this works is the same as it did in Breath of the Wild, where you can basically see, you can see so far that you're basically constantly distracted by things, by points of interest, right? Be it shrines or structures or enemy camps or whatever. When you're on the surface, whatever it is, and please excuse the bird who's going nuts in the background here. I don't know if any of y'all can hear that.
It's a very happy bird.
A very happy bird. In the depths, nothing works the same way, right? You can't, like, just because visibility is so restricted, exploration is completely different down there. You know, you're basically having to, you're having to find light routes that you're using to illuminate large sections of the depths. The light routes are kind of like, they're analogous to Sheikah Towers, to Skyview Towers, right? Like they're a structure that's scattered around the depths. They're few and far between. And once you've activated one, it illuminates a large area around that light route. So you're kind of going from one of those to another and exploring that way. But I really do like, I like that system a lot though, because it makes the depths play very different from the surface. And it means that when you do stumble across something like the abandoned central zonite mine under the Great Plateau, or, you know, I drove a mine cart down like a Temple of Doom style mine track.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I discovered several massive deposits of zonite just exploring around down there, and also one or two pieces of armor.
Well,
so,
and there's also just like hundreds of Poe spirits just hanging out down there. So yeah, like that's, it's easy to, while you're you know, flying around doing whatever, you can see all the little glowy bits off on the side. I found underneath the Great Plateau, I found something called a revitalizing spring. It was like the hidden revitalizing spring.
Oh, which, I didn't
if you
find
like
that.
Dive into it, will regen your hearts except for gloom ones.
Okay.
Also, I found some giant pose, which are worth 20 or 50 or something.
Yeah. Again, going back to the economies of things in this game.
Yeah. So, it's a really, really cool area. There's like, I found something called the Forest of Spirits, which had a bunch of gloom tainted Ents that attacked me.
Great.
Which was really fun. Yeah. It's literally, you have three whole separate playable areas that are all massive
and very different from each other
and very different and all have very, interesting, unique things about them and mm-hmm. things to find. And like, there's no way I'm going to spend less than 100 hours on this one playthrough of this game.
Yeah, I would say 100 hours and maybe even conservative. Like, it's just, it's incredible. I have spent, of those three areas, I've spent by far the least amount of time in the sky.
I have too, actually.
And it's not because I'm not interested in the sky. Like, I really want to poke around up there. I think currently it's a little difficult because traversing from one island to another up there is a little reliant on the amount of battery that you have for your energy cell, right? Like if you want to fly a Zonai wing from one island to the next, then that takes kind of a lot of battery. So anyway, I am going to go poke around up there more. I'm probably going to wait to do that until after I've done the Rito stuff. Then once that's finished, I'm probably going to devote a good chunk of time to just exploring some islands in the sky because they have such a different vibe and feel than anything on the surface or in the depths, right?
For sure.
Like the aesthetics and the experiences between all three of those places are very different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally agree. And I'm hoping that eventually I'll be able to get to the sky more easily because as it is right now, the only thing I really have available to me is shooting up one of the sky towers and then trying to glide my way to the closest platform that I can find.
Right.
And that isn't normally even the highest platform or even the most interesting one. So then I'm sitting on this island and I have no way to get up because my battery power isn't high enough to just activate a flamethrower balloon and get high enough. So I'm like in this constant state of like, I want to go explore more of the sky, but I don't have an easy way to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I totally agree, Matt. I think that's one of those things where, especially given some of the videos that I'm seeing float around on social media, whereas the early main experience of this game is in poking around the depths and in revisiting old places from the surface and discovering new enemies. It seems like the late game loop is mostly just trying to figure out where the ceiling is on vehicle construction. And like once you've got tons of battery that you can rely on and you've got a lot of parts from the dispenser machines, you know, then just trying to figure out like, what is the craziest, most insane vehicle that I can build? I mean, people have been making like vertical takeoff attack ships and all kinds of crazy stuff.
I'm trying to get there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm trying to, get there where it's actually useful and I don't run out of battery as I activate it.
Me too. But the thing is, I am very intentionally having to remind myself that I do not want to be rushing through this game. I do not want to feel like I have to get to anything quickly. I want to enjoy this game on my own time. And in a very organic way. And I feel like I'm managing to do that so far, which is a really, really great feeling.
And everything about it. Oh, that's nice.
So I think, Matt, that's all that I want to say in regards to the depths and the surface for now. Maybe we'll have a rapid fire section before the end of the episode where we just answer a few quick questions about all these things. What I want to talk about real quick is story stuff. Because
actually, I'm going to interrupt you because I have one question that I just now thought of.
Oh, yeah,
that is very interesting. What is your favorite Zonai device, both for traversal and for fuse?
Tell you what, put that in the rapid fire section.
Oh, I like it here because I just thought of it.
Rapid fire.
Fine.
Come back to it.
Fine.
Okay. So I want to talk about story a little bit because we have not progressed the story a ton. We haven't done any of the main quest line of stuff besides the portion where you get the glider, right? But sure. even that's interesting because this is a thing I've been seeing a lot online is that there are so many people who are making it to the surface and just casting out in any different direction. Like there are people who've been playing this game for 50 hours and still don't have the glider.
Seriously?
Yeah.
They just like didn't go. How do you do anything?
The only way that you would even know to do that is if you follow the prompt to go to the lookout landing tower in the first place. You know,
that's true. Yeah.
Like if you get to the surface and then you immediately went to the Dueling Peaks or to the Great Plateau or to Gerudo Desert or whatever, then, you would never get the glider. And the thing is, so I actually really love this because in Breath of the Wild, obviously, you need the glider. You can't even get off the Great Plateau legitimately without it. And then the rest of the gameplay loop, it's necessary to have that. Tears of the Kingdom, I think that people are going to do no glider runs of this game in the future, you know?
With the Zoni planes, theoretically, yeah.
They're going to rely on exclusively Zoni device creation, horse travel. And I can, I think those people would probably also swear off fast travel to shrines and stuff. But to me, that's such an interesting thought because the structure of this game is such that that could be a totally legitimate choice for you. Like, I can see, especially the kind of person who enjoys having a lot of challenge in a playthrough of a game, right? You know, like kind of a version of what people do with three heart runs, for instance. You know, it's a similar line of thinking. And I think that Tears of the Kingdom is the kind of game where you could successfully do that. Like, you would be playing a very different kind of game than most people who are playing Tears of the Kingdom if you didn't have a glider. But it's a no less valid way to play, and the game will completely allow you to do that. Like, you're not being penalized in any major way for deciding to do that. You can still play and complete the game as you normally would. You would just have that extra layer of friction with the world.
Actually, you know what you can't do without the glider is safely get into the depths.
I guess that's
you can't safely get into the depths without the glider, so that is a problem.
That is a problem. Okay.
Sorry to just totally derail your entire point minute and a half.
Yeah, I know. That is kind of a shame. I do wonder if there is an easier way to get back and forth from the depths to the surface than what we've currently discovered. Because I was thinking about this yesterday. I have not found a way to get out of the depths and get back to the surface.
Besides fast travel. I think a hot air balloon would work too, but you'd have to have a pretty substantial battery or just use a campfire and just go slow. Because campfires work the same as a Zoni flamethrower. It's just a lot slower.
Right, yeah. Like any flame that you have in that basket is going to do the job.
Right.
And doesn't drain battery.
Right.
So that's nice. But then, you would have to have a hot air balloon on you.
And it doesn't work for the downward part.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe if you were like free falling in the hot air balloon and then you lit the fire like close to the surface. And that's a lot of setup for.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
But that's what I'm talking about. Some people are going to do it. Look, honestly, the craziest thing, like what I have gathered the most from my 15-ish hours with this game so far is that in the way that people were still finding new and crazy ways to play Breath of the Wild 7 years later.
Yeah,
I give it double that time on Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, easily. Yeah. People are going to find ridiculous ways to do. And especially with all the. Someone's going to find a way to beat every enemy in this game with just like a stick and a Lazalfo's tail attached to it, because apparently that is also a thing that you can do. And the Lazalfo's tail like reaches out and smacks people.
Oh, like a whip?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's really cool.
Man, I just love that. I love that. That goes back to the whole no trash items sort of deal, you know?
Yeah.
Which is just so great. But anyway, so speaking about the story section, though, so obviously we've done the first main quest line that involves talking to Pura and leads you to unlocking your first Skyview Tower.
Which, by the way, Pura got a glow up. She is very attractive.
Yeah, her age reversal process has come to a very swell point.
Yes, absolutely agree. She is quite attractive. And I did see minor spoiler for a place that we haven't been yet, very minor, but Paya shows up again as well in Kakariko Village, and she also got a big glow up. So we not only have Thirst Trap Ganondorf, we now have Thirst Trap Pura and Thirst Trap Paya.
This is the balance of character design in Zelda games. All of your characters are going to be either insanely goofy or insanely horny. Like,
And I think Tears of the Kingdom is skewing towards insanely horny for the most part.
It's got a balance of both. I mean, we did run back into a certain...
That certain someone.
That certain special someone from Breath of the Wild in the depths as part of our... And actually here, let's just go ahead and say, look, I know we already dropped a spoiler thing at the beginning of the episode. I don't have a specific time code for you here, but we are going to be discussing certain characters and
plot points
and early plot beats in this next section. So if you don't want a part of any of that, then now's the time to bounce. Okay, if you're still here, we ran back into Master Koga and the Yiga clan.
I was so happy to hear for that to pan out because you talked about this last week.
Yeah.
Last week you said, I wonder if the pit we threw Master Koga in leads to those depths. Well, apparently it does. And here we are. And Master Koga
mentioned it. Like he specifically said, like, oh, hey, I've been down here for years because you threw me in that hole.
And I landed down here and somehow didn't die, which is good for him, I guess. But yeah, dude has just been chilling in the depths for 7 years.
But again, talking about that like goofy to horny scale.
Very goofy.
Master Koga is like the ultimate far end of the goofy scale.
And I thought it was hilarious this time when he was doing his intro, he had the two Yiga crones that were like throwing the Yiga money at him, showering him. They were making it rain on him while he's doing all this crazy posing.
I love that boss fight. It's so ridiculous. It's like Master Koga trying to run you over in a bulldozer that he made with Ultra Hand, I guess. I don't know how he did that. Are we supposed to assume that he has?
So what he said was they found basically the same abilities that Link has, except for auto build, and they have to build all of their Zonai devices by hand. But they figured out in the 7 years that they've been down there. I'm saying 7 years. I'm just gonna say that that's the timeline. It's not officially confirmed, but it's just easier to say that.
So it's so fun to me that like this headcanon. Span of time is 7 years because that's the same amount of time between Child Link and Adult Link and Ocarina of Time.
And so,
we know 7 years can result in a lot of happenings in the world of The Legend of Zelda. So
yeah,
very fun little echoing theme there.
So Koga and the Yiga clan have migrated underground into the depths and have figured out by themselves how to activate and use all these Zonai devices and have become pretty good at it actually. So I think it's really cool that they have gotten that ability and are actively trying to use it against you in the service of who he calls he just calls him the master, but there's another adjective on there. I don't remember what it is, but basically Ganondorf and trying to use the Zonai devices and powers thereof to destroy the world. But yeah, he is
is that all?
Yeah. I mean, always. He is nuts. And that fight was fun. I really enjoyed that. Yeah. It wasn't too terribly difficult, but it was fun.
Yep. Yep. I definitely had a good time with it. So anyway, early quest stuff, talking to Pura, getting the glider, unlocking Skyview Towers. One of the next places that we went, and I think this is probably the biggest story thing that we've done so far, is this game does have an analog to the memory system in Breath of the Wild. It's got a similar sort of thing where you find locations throughout the world and you can unlock memories there. And so far, the only one that I have found is canonically the first one that you get to. I think you can do these in any order that you want. But the first one that you're supposed to get to is... It's right next to the new Serene Stable, which is up in the Tabantha Frontier area. It's off to the west of Hyrule Castle. If you go through the Breach of Demise, then you'll kind of get over to where this stable is at.
So you keep saying that. I never actually found the Breach of Demise.
It's that, it was in Breath of the Wild too. It's that yellow spiky rock canyon.
Oh, see, I came to it just through the Hyrule Stormlands or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Just over a bridge. So I didn't actually go through the Breach of Demise.
Oh, but you like fought the Hinox that's on that bridge. Yep. And yeah. Okay, yep. Cool.
I just went that way.
Cool. So anyway, it's over there. It's kind of off towards where the Ridgeland Tower was in Breath of the Wild. And actually I found that pond where that used to be with all the, in Breath of the Wild, it had like tons of lightning, Wizrobes.
Yep.
And anyway, there's nothing there now except for the pond.
Yeah. But, there's another Skyview Tower somewhat close by
to there. Yeah. But anyway, so you go over to the new Serene Stable and you find Impa, who's kind of traveling Hyrule, trying to figure out what's up with these geoglyphs, which are these massive like runes that have just appeared on the surface of the world.
They look like glowy grass. I wonder what would happen if you mowed the grass.
Yeah.
Would it
still be there?
I'm not sure. I mean, they're like crop circles, basically, is kind of what they are.
Really what? I thought that they were crop circles, and I kind of tried to cut it down with a sword one time and nothing happened.
So. Yeah. So anyway, you go through a little mini quest with Impa where you have to float a hot air balloon and look at the geoglyph from the sky. But anyway, the memory that you unlock on that first geoglyph has some really neat and interesting implications. I'm not sure if all of the memories are following what's happening with Zelda post what took place in the area underneath Hyrule Castle, but this one definitely does. We see that Zelda has been transported to the distant past.
Time hijinks.
It's a thing in this game where she is happened upon by Rauru. And not
his wife,
not just Rauru, but his wife, who is an ancient Hylian.
And her name is Sonya.
Yeah. And as Max pointed out in his thread that he's doing on Twitter, he's got a little thread going where he's documenting some of his thoughts and observations. It's a really fun read. You should go check that out. But anyway, as he mentioned, the first canonical queen of Hyrule that we've ever seen.
Oh, that's actually a super good point. I guess Hyrule Warriors isn't canonical in any way, but Zelda was queen of Hyrule in Hyrule Warriors. But anyway, yeah. So Sonya, also interestingly, not named Zelda.
Yes.
Very interestingly, because supposedly through all the lore that we have previously had for The Legend of Zelda, is Zelda is the name of the female heir to the throne for like all time.
Yeah.
In Hyrule.
Yeah.
Actually, was Zelda's mother's name Zelda?
It's unclear.
Yeah, it was never mentioned, was it? Never specified. So, and what I found really interesting, these ancient Hylians were the darker skin, the same skin tone that Zonai's are. It's the darker, almost like chestnutty kind of skin tone, and they have very similar markings.
Yep.
Like the facial markings, almost tribalistic.
Yeah. And so the lore that we discover here is that Rauru was the first king of Hyrule, basically. And so obviously I have a lot of questions here. There's some things that we're going to kind of that I'm sure are going to unfold for us as we find more of these memories. But I've got a lot of questions as to how this lore lines up with what we know to be the founding of Hyrule from Skyward Sword, right? And there's a lot of things that kind of go into that. One is the fact that, so we've got all these sky islands in the game, and we've already said that we have some notable similarities between like the Lanayru robots of Skyward Sword and the Zonai constructs, right? Mm-hmm. And just the sky islands themselves feel very similar to the whole situation in Skyward Sword. And I'm wondering if, again, going back to that whole thing of like, a lot of times there's echoes of themes
without being directly related.
But I'm wondering if it is kind of mentioned that, I'm wondering if there's any kind of references towards how far after the islands from the sky merged with the surface in Skyward Sword this is.
So one thing that could be true is this could be the first kingdom that was destroyed by demise, which resulted in Skyloft being sent into the sky.
Gotcha.
That's possible. I don't know if it's true. Obviously, hopefully we'll find out.
Yeah.
But that would be an interesting way to keep the canon and lore and not have to retcon anything.
Yeah.
Or they could just totally be retconning it, or it could be an alternate timeline totally. Like it could just be a whole own thing.
My headcanon right now is that this is, so from the time that the end of Skyward Sword happens, the islands rejoin with the surface.
Well, only the one island. It was only the goddess. Okay, that's Skyloft still stayed.
Yeah,
up there.
That's fair. I'm wondering if this is maybe like 100 or so years after that, and the people have been thriving, but it didn't solidify into a kingdom until that time.
Yeah,
and
that's fair.
One of the reasons that I'm wondering that is you can see the Sky Temple of Time on the surface in this memory. It's in the background.
Ah, that's fair.
And the main mechanisms of the Temple of Time are so similar to the cogs and wheels of what we saw in the Sacred Grounds. In the sealed temple,
yeah,
in Skyward Sword, and I'm just wondering if that's, like the sealed temple in Skyward Sword was expanded upon and became the Temple of Time that we've been seeing in the sky, and then is on the surface in this memory. I have no idea. That sounds way too specific of a connection compared to what Nintendo normally does with, you know, talking about the events of past games in relation to the new game that you're playing, but. who's to say? One thing I will say is that I really do enjoy, I mean, this memory is a bit longer than the memories that we get in Breath of the Wild. And I hope that that continues to be the case, because like slightly more involved narrative dumps being a part of this is something that excites me.
Mm-hmm. I also really like that it's not about Link rediscovering something. It's about Link learning something completely new. Like they're not retreading the amnesia aspect, which I think is great.
And in some ways, this is happening concurrently with what we're doing moment to moment in the game, right? It like in a different time period for sure, but we're documenting Zelda's journey through the game, basically, is how I interpret this happening. It's kind of the same thing as like the glimpses we see of Zelda at the end of Skyward Sword in the credits, right?
Yeah, where
we see
she's her off doing her own thing, her own and we're thing. Following in her path.
Yeah, I get the impression that this is a similar sort of device, except we're discovering it while playing the game in real time, not at the very end of it, which is really cool.
I like that.
So we discovered the geoglyph, and then the next place that we go to after that, you know, Impa gives us a hint that she has an idea that maybe the Forgotten Temple is a good place for us to check out next. And that excited me so much because I love the Forgotten Temple as a location in Breath of the Wild and always wish that there was just a little bit more to it. I actually, in the lead up to the release of this game, had been wondering if maybe the Forgotten Temple was going to get expanded into a dungeon. And it does not appear that that is the case, but I was so intrigued by this little tidbit that I went pretty far out of my way to the Forgotten Temple to check it out. And, you know, it's definitely not nearly as scary from a combat standpoint as it was in Breath of the Wild, right?
Right.
Where there's like a million guardians that are about to snipe you out of the sky. But once you get way far back in there, there's a new chamber that's opened up behind the goddess statue in this area.
Which got toppled.
Yeah.
Makes me so sad.
This area is cool. This
yeah, little, this it's little really, chamber. Really cool.
Basically, what it is a map room that shows you where in Hyrule the geoglyphs are.
Would you call it the silent cartographer?
It's a mix between that and the Well of Souls from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, good one. Yeah. Good callback. Yep. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And so what I really like about this is that, one, it kind of removes some of the mystery. Like if it's your goal to seek these things out, then it gives you some frame of reference in which you can do that. But also it does a thing that Breath of the Wild did not do, which is tell you the order in which the memories are supposed to be seen if you care about that. Which I really appreciate.
I love that. Yeah, it's really cool to be able to go and make sure you're seeing it in order. Because in Breath of the Wild, I never saw it in order until the second or third time I played through it. And I still didn't find the memories in order, but I just like kind of didn't watch them. And then once I had them all, I went and watched them back to back to back.
Right.
In order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all really fun. I'm super intrigued for everything that's going to happen there. I would say that from a story standpoint, I am so heavily invested in what's happening in this game right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me like I'm heading to Rizzo Village in the game right now, and I'm going to probably do the dungeon there, and then I'm just going to go start hunting memories because I want to know the backstory to the game.
Yeah.
Like that's probably what I'm going to do while I'm on my business trips. I'm going to knock out all the memories because I really want to know what we're dealing with here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm probably going to do something pretty similar. I can definitely say the section of time after I finish whatever's happening in the Rito area is going to be a huge chunk of exploration, right? I think it's going to be quite a long time before I go on to my next phenomena and do like whatever the next dungeon area.
Phenomena.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think it's going to be quite a while before I move on to the next main story thing. I'm just going to spend a lot of time poking around this world. But anyway, do you have anything else that you want to say about the story as we've sort of seen it so far?
I'm very excited to see more of the Zonai. Like so far, the only Zonai we've seen is Rauru and, obviously the constructs. Like I want to know more about them and their culture and what the relationship was between the Zonai and the Hylians and where did the Zonai go? And like all of these are really cool questions because basically we've introduced this, what's a good analog? We basically introduced a forerunner species into Zelda lore. And, you know, just as interesting as it was in Halo lore, as what are the Forerunner? What happened to them? Now we have the same question about the Zonai. Who are they? What are they? What did they do? What happened to them? Where did they go?
That's a great, great connection. It's a very similar thing, and I completely agree with you. I'm very interested to see any clues I can get about the timeline placement of this game. I actually get the impression that I doubt that it's going to be a situation where someone in this game comes to you and says, hey, isn't it nice that we exist in the downfall timeline or whatever, right? Like, it's not going to be that explicit, but I do feel like there are going to be some very direct references to the timeline situation in this game. I just get that. I haven't seen anything that confirms that, but I get
it's that a feeling that I have too. Like this feels like a game that is wanting to place itself somewhere.
Yeah.
And whether that be somewhere totally new or somewhere familiar, I don't think that we are going to go the length of this game without getting at least a 80% understanding of where it is.
I agree. And I'm very, very interested in finding at least somewhat of a decent answer to that question. So let's move on from talking about the story. Before we wrap up this episode, I'd like to do a little bit of a lightning round, just a few quick discussions that come to the top of mind.
Yep.
And I know that you've got one in the hopper ready to roll. So I'm
two.
Okay, well, let that first one off the chain real fast.
Yeah. So what is your...
Do you want another hand rolled or what do you think?
No, I'm good. Okay. Yeah. So what my question was earlier and is still is, what is your favorite Zonai device for exploration and for a combat fuse type of mechanic?
Okay. So for exploration at this point, it's definitely got to be the Zonai wing. Those things just feel very easy and fun to control. It's so fun to me that they control exactly like you would think they should, right? By like moving around on it and tilting it certain directions, you're altering the steering of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice because you don't even have to worry about finding a control stick necessarily. If you know kind of how to do that the right way. And I really, really appreciate that. It's just so fun to fly those things around. And I can't wait until I've got more battery and can kind of take them further.
Yeah.
In the depths, so obviously mostly I'm controlling them with fans right now.
For sure.
But in the depths, I did strap a rocket on one.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're real fast when you get a rocket on it.
It kills your battery.
Yeah. Like, absolutely depletes it.
Yeah.
I've upgraded my battery to have almost a full extra battery cell. So I have 2 out of 3 on my second battery.
Okay.
And I have kind of gotten into this habit of, if I'm trying to get somewhere far away, either in the depths or if I'm on the sky, I'll just auto build a glider that has a control stick, one rocket and 2 fans, and then just go as long as it'll take me. You can use a big Zonai charge to mitigate the damage that the rocket does to your battery supply.
Right.
Which, if you're trying to get somewhere really far away, it's almost a must. I've finally gotten it to the point where with the big Zonai charge and I've been able to fly the glider until it literally will despawn. Because they have a certain lifespan.
Yeah.
So I found a way to do that, which is really great. And it is definitely the fastest means of traversal by far.
Yeah. Again, this is one of the things that I'm going to be messing around with much more once I get back to the sky. And especially as I'm discovering more of the Pachinko dispenser machines, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like getting more things in the little pods that you can just bust out whenever you want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be much more experimental with aircraft.
And
that's going to be a lot of fun. For combat, that's kind of tough. I wouldn't say that I'm using Zonai devices a ton for combat right now. I do keep a flame emitter shield in my inventory, because that's just a pretty useful thing to have around, right? Just being able to like roast things that are getting a little too close.
And they do. My big problem with the flame emitter shield is it breaks very, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
But you're right. I keep one around as well. One thing I really am liking for combat is just the soldier level 2 horns or the captain's horns. You can just throw that on like a traveler's sword and get an instant, you know, 13 to 15 attack.
Sword. I mean, I'm doing like a lot of that.
Yeah, those are great.
But that's more like, that's more fuse like weapon economy
that's
stuff.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay,
fuse is weapon economy.
I thought you were talking more about just like the Zonai devices, like fans, rockets, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, those two. But yeah. Like, I think that... I think it's a really cool balance that they have.
Well, from a weapon standpoint, yes, I'm doing a ton of construct horns. My go-to whenever I find a weapon that is not super intrinsically good, rusted broadsword or something.
Yeah.
I usually just always slap an amber on it.
Yeah, that's a good one. I have a couple of, I was experimenting with the blades and, the blade gem combos. I have a diamond bladed, Royal Claymore in my inventory right now. Which looks really cool.
Does it do too much outside of just giving you lots of extra durability on the sword?
It's a plus 25 attack and extra durability.
Well, that's nice. I mean, given how stingy this game is with rupees and how much things cost, I'm not sure that I would want to take that over just the straight 500 rupees you can get from selling the diamond.
Yeah, I like it was an experiment. And sure. I think that from now on, when I get diamonds, I'll be mostly selling them. But
yeah. But then, black Boko horns as well.
Black Boko, black Moblin, black Lazulfos horns are actually the best. Black Lazulfos horns are like a 33 attack boost.
Nice.
And they look cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. They look like a single bladed wicked scimitar. It's really awesome.
Nice. Okay. What is one character that you haven't seen in the game yet who you are hoping to run into in the future?
Cass. I really want to, I don't know that he's in it, but I really, really want to see Cass.
I completely agree. I want to catch up with, because I think that was the side character that was kind of meaning the most to us in our Breath of the Wild playthrough. And so I do really want to catch up with him. I want to see what's going on with the two champions that we haven't seen any of in the trailers, which is Yunobo and, or sorry, not the champions, the...
they are the new champions.
The new champions, I guess, which is Yunobo and Tiba.
So...
we've seen Sidon and Riju, but we have not seen Tiba or Yunobo.
Okay.
So I really want to see what's going on.
I know what's going on with Tiba. You'll find out soon.
Okay, cool. I'm sitting over here thinking, yeah, like, where's Tiba? Is he okay? Is he all right?
It seems that in your anger, you killed him.
No!
Yeah. So bad. God, so horrible. Anyway. So yeah, you'll find out what's up with Tiba soon. Yeah, I think Cass is the number one right now. Sidon, of course, is a super cool character, but we know that he's okay and around
because
he's in the trailer.
The Great Deku Tree. Really want to check in with
good call.
Tree Pope.
Yeah. Tree Pope. Yep. We do love a good Tree Pope.
We do, yeah. Let's see. Okay, you said you had another one.
What do you make of all the extra dragons that are flying around? Because there are like multiple dragons in the sky. There is even a dragon in the depths. Have you seen him?
I have not.
There is a dragon in the depths, and it is like pale white, and it looks like it should if it's been living underground its whole life.
I will say that I have not. I've seen dragons flying around in the sky. I have not gotten close enough to any of them to realize if they're, you know, Farash Nadra or Dinral or new dragons. I know I haven't seen Dinral. I feel like I've just been seeing a lot of Farash.
I've seen Farash a couple of times. I haven't seen Dinral or Nadra, but the dragons that are up super high in the sky don't have any of the markings that Nadra or Dinral did. And they're like, it's a light lilac color.
Okay.
And Nadra was blue after it was freed from, Malice, and then the depths dragon is, like I said, just super pale. It's like it's almost like white.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very interested to see what's going on there. I feel like I get the impression that the dragons are going to be a little bit more directly related to the story happenings in this game.
Yep.
Than in Breath of the Wild, and I'm very excited for that. I think they're by far one of the most interesting parts of like the scenery, like the ecology of this world.
Yep.
So definitely very much looking forward to doing that. But yeah, I haven't really gotten to a place where I've stumbled across anything meaningful there.
And it makes me wonder, because like the biggest thing that dragon parts were used for in Breath of the Wild was upgrading gear, and you needed specific parts from specific dragons. So I'm wondering if it's just a more generalized dragon scale, dragon claw, dragon tooth, horn, etc. And like they're not going to go straight with the naming of the dragons outside of Farash, who we already know.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, here's one. So we've got Amiibo. What is the first main weapon that you want to get from an Amiibo that you're going to try and take through the whole game with you?
You know this.
Tell me anyway.
It's the Fierce Deity Sword. Yeah. I want that baby. I want it badly. I wonder if our house is still there.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah.
Cause I want to put it up on a plaque in my house.
I hope so. I really do want to go check that out. And that does actually kind of make me wonder if the house is still there. Does it still have, all the like storage capability for weapons the way it did in Breath of the Wild, or is there another area that we have, we can do that at? Very curious to know what's going on there. Yeah. I really want to go to Hitenno Village and just check in.
Wouldn't it be cool? So we know that Tears of the Kingdom carries over your horses that you have in your stable.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool if it also carried over what you had in your house?
I would say that that would be awesome, except there are several weapon types that are just not in both games. That,
like what?
The elemental swords aren't in this game at all.
Oh, that's fair. I mean, I didn't have any elemental swords in my...
Like thunder blades or no, flame blades?
I displayed all of the champion stuff. And then if I had anything extra, it was Royal Guard. The black swords.
Well, that is something very interesting. I do wonder if the champion gear makes a return in this game at all.
Well, it looked like Raiju was using two of the Swords of the Seven.
Yeah.
When we saw her in this trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interested to see what pans out there.
And Sidon was definitely using a light scale trident.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. For sure. Definitely saw that. But do we get them? I don't know.
That would be nice.
That would be nice.
Also, how do we get this decay off of all of our weapons, which is decreasing their attack power?
So
and
I don't know if there's a way to undecay weapons that are decayed. I will say that I have found there are like shades of
The ghosties that can give you stuff. Yeah, in the depths.
There are ghosties in the depths, and they can give you undecayed weapons.
Yeah, so, I did run into a couple of them.
So, but if there's a way to restore decayed weapons, I have no idea. If there is,
that would be nice.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we have? What else? What is... Okay. If you had to fight one Gleok and one Lynel, or five Lynels at the same time, which would you prefer to fight?
Five Lynels. Absolutely. No doubt. Five. Give me the five Lynels. I'd at least stand a chance.
That's awesome.
Those Gleoks. So they took the most pushover enemy from Legend of Zelda and made it the most terrifying enemy of all time.
It's crazy.
It's horrifying.
It's absolutely insane.
I'm terrified to go to the bridge over Lake Hylia and fight the flame Gleok that's there.
Yeah. That might be one of the main reasons I haven't gone over there yet. Because I was like, I feel like I'm going to get there and I won't be even slightly prepared for any of that.
No. I mean, flame is a little bit easier in a lot of ways than thunder. Like, I think lightning is the most OP elemental type in the game.
Yeah.
Like, it just has a huge area of effect. It makes you drop your weapons. It does massive amounts of damage. Mm-hmm. The only way to combat against it is to wear that stupid rubber armor, which has extremely low armor value in general.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unless you can get the Thunder Helm from Raiju again, which that would be awesome.
Okay. So Shock Fruit, Freeze Fruit, or Flame Fruit?
I like flaming arrows a lot.
Yeah.
As far as like what is the most useful, the ice fruit that you can get where you get the plus attack power in cold weather. I'm using that a lot because I'm in the Rito area of the world right now. So I've been getting a lot of ice fruit. But as far as like what I want to throw on a weapon, definitely fire. I actually haven't used a shock fruit yet. Maybe I should do that. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because that's I don't think, thunder arrows, ice arrows, fire arrows, they're not in this game. You just make them with that stuff.
Yeah. Which I like a lot because I have like 150 arrows and I have tons of other items that I can just constantly throw on it. So,
sure. Yeah.
The only thing I don't like about the system is how long it takes me to scroll to find what I'm looking for. It's kind of a pain.
I wish you could favorite items and keep them in a menu together. That would be really useful.
Or you could just like take out the items that don't do anything for you, like a meat arrow. It does nothing.
Yeah,
like just take it out. I don't want to infuse that onto
an
arrow.
Well, you say it does nothing, but I mean, you can use meat as like monster bait.
Oh, that's right.
So you could shoot a steak over by some bokoblins,
and then they get all excited, and then you lure them into a trap and blow them up. That's fair.
So everything can do something. It's just, is it what you, you know? Let's see here. Give me one more before we get out of here.
What armor are you going to be looking for and wearing for most of this game, because you stuck with the Hylian armor pretty religiously until you got the Champion's Tunic or the Amiibo Link armor. So are you going to be sticking with the same kind of
It's going to depend on the upgrade requirements. So like with the Amiibo armor from Breath of the Wild, the only reason I didn't wear any of that more is because it required star fragments to upgrade.
Which are pretty plentiful this time around.
But then the max defense possible on those was still lower than the max possible on the Champion's Tunic.
Well, that's because Champion's Tunic was the highest defense possible the game.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's going to depend on that a little bit, like the utility of things. So I'm going to answer from just a fashion standpoint, because a lot of this is really going to come down to what are like the set bonuses on upgraded armor.
There's already a lot of new armor. Like I found the squirrel glider suit, which is really cool.
Yeah.
That thing is awesome, by the way.
I haven't gotten it yet. So I think that I'm probably going to, you know, depending on if it has a good upgrade scale and if it has a set bonus that is any kind of useful, I can actually see myself wearing the archaic tunic and everything that you get on the Great Sky Island.
It does look pretty good.
It looks really good, and I mean it's kind of this game's main armor set a little bit, right? Like it's the one that you see Link wearing the most in the trailers and all that, and I think it looks really neat. Aside from that, ancient armor is probably not in this game. Aside from that, I can see myself keeping a fully upgraded set of the Tunic of Time around.
Yeah. So when you complete the Bargainer's Statue quest in the depths, you can buy the Darkling Tunic.
I
bought the Darkling Tunic too. Yeah. I think that's pretty cool. I'll probably stick with the Knight's armor is just always so useful, and like, its upgrade, at least in Breath of the Wild, wasn't terrible and gave you the second highest armor that you could have in the game outside of the Champion's Tunic.
Yeah.
So I'll probably keep that around. Hopefully the Fierce Deity stuff is still in the game. I'd like to get all the Fierce Deity armor again. I still always will love wearing the Fierce Deity, just the mask, because it gives you a permanent single level attack boost, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And it just looks super cool, especially with the Knight's armor. So I don't know. That's probably kind of what I'll be going for. I'm really, really interested to see what kind of new armor sets there are. I've already gotten the Yiga mask, which I got off the Great Plateau. Yeah. So
I didn't get that.
If you go to where the hut that Bosphoramus was hanging out there's a, like, you fight a couple of Yiga dudes and then it unlocks the door and you go in there and they kidnapped this clothier to make him make all their clothes, and he'll give you a Yiga mask. It's just a one defense bonus, but it's a plus stealth. Were wearing the Sheikah armor and then had this, I'm sure that the set bonuses would probably transfer. But you could be masquerading as a Yiga assassin if you wanted to.
Sounds fun to me. I get the impression that there's a lot more outfits in this game than there were in Breath of the Wild. So I'm definitely very excited for that, because fashion game is the true end game, as we know.
Absolutely. Always. Destiny.
Yep. All right. I think that's about all that we've got. Do you have any last tidbits that you want to drop on us before we head out of here, Matt?
I'm just absolutely so loving this game. I am so excited by what I've already played, and even more excited by what I haven't. I can't wait to get the Master Sword back. I can't wait to see what equipment is out there, what there is to explore. I think that this is just a true masterpiece of a game, and I can't wait to get more into it.
Yeah, I'm feeling this game so hard right now. I'm enjoying my time with it so much. It's got its hooks in me in all of the major ways, like, you know, combat, inventory, lore, you know, level design, shrines, all of the things that I needed this game to be, it is so far. And I don't get the impression that it's going to cease being those things. I think this is an incredibly confidently made game. It knows exactly what it is, what it needs to be. And it did that. Like, it became that. So very, very excited to get into more of it. And I mean, yeah, I can hardly put it down. Like, when I'm not playing it, I want to be playing it.
Yes, that is absolutely accurate.
Yep. Alrighty, well, we will be back next week to talk a little bit more about Tears of the Kingdom, specifically the systems and mechanics with perspectives from our resident expert in game design, Mr. Max Nichols himself. Until then, let us know how you're feeling about these episodes, if you're enjoying them. If there's anything that you want to hear us talk about specifically before we move on from Tears of the Kingdom and get into our next game, which is going to be Phantom Hourglass, then let us know. Hit us up on socials. If you're in Discord, let us know there. We are definitely open to suggestions. We're in uncharted territory here, and we're very open to hearing what y'all want to hear discussions about in these early days of this, of all of us experiencing this game together. So going to be a fun time. Until that happens, it is time to wrap it up and get out of here for the week. Matt, you've got a plane to catch, so we got to get you out of here.
Let's do it. I got to go to do business.
You got to go do business. And Mr. Sawyer Nug desperately wants to get out into the garage right now.
So. And well, we need to go say hi to Mr. Sawyer Nug.
We do. Sawyer Nug is he's the nuggiest nug.
Oh, he's the cutest.
We love that guy. All righty, y'all. If you enjoyed today's episode and you would like a little extra Sacred Realms in your life, you can head over to patreon.com/sacredrealmspod and become a patron. We check for a 5-star review.
Sure.
Got no rupees? It's not a problem. 5-star Apple Podcast reviews are a great free way to support us. More reviews means that more people see our show. That makes us very happy, Hylians. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sacred Realms Pod for updates on the podcast and for behind the scenes action. Sacred Realms will be back next Wednesday with continuing thoughts on The Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom. Tears of the Kingdom can, of course, be played on the Nintendo Switch, and I will actually suggest, if you're one of those people out there who's still playing on a launch Switch and you've been considering whether or not to upgrade to the SWOLED, especially if you play primarily handheld, this game is totally worth it. It looks so good on the OLED screen, and the battery life is spectacular. Like, it's just really great. So that's my personal recommendation. Only you can decide how to spend your money, but I think it's a worthwhile investment. But in the meantime, may your hearts be full. May your arrows never miss. We'll catch y'all next week. Sacred Realms is an independent podcast production, which is produced, edited, and mixed by me, Lyndon Willoughby. Our music comes from Zelda and Chill by Mikkel and is graciously provided to us by Mikkel and Game Chops Records. Zelda and Chill is available to stream on Spotify or to purchase directly from GameChops.com. Finally, our thanks go to Nintendo for creating such exceptional and innovative experiences.